All righty. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Tuesday afternoon edition. A little bit later, we'll talk to Andrew Herman, a senior editor at DNA Info. And, well, they've got a story this week about Madison, West Madison, and how they're actually branding themselves now in a way with a nod to the past. You know, it used to be Skid Row. I think they're calling it now Madison Row or Hometown Row, something like that. Just remarkable transformation there. And it's interesting to me the way they're embracing it. DNA Info has written about that, and we'll talk to him. Suzanne Mushin will be here later in the program as well. But we usually start most Tuesdays with John Najarian. You see him on CNBC and elsewhere talking about what's going on Wall Street. I know he travels to Switzerland for the big meetings there, and apparently he's at one now overseas as well. Or maybe it's vacation. Najarian, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Great to be with you, Stephen. Yeah, it's more vacation than anything else.
Do you have your sunscreen on? Are you okay there?
Yeah, Dominican Republic is beautiful. People are lovely, and the weather is absolutely perfect. Oh. So nothing to complain about here, Steve.
Well, I'm happy you're taking time out of your vacation to talk to us for a few minutes, and the news is good. After, what, 7 or 8 down sessions, that looks like the Dow and Wall Street's going to finish up today.
Yeah, consumer confidence. That's a really big driver. Of course, the reverse of confidence was last week with the president and the Republicans not even bringing it to a vote, the health care vote. But most of us thought that that fix to Obamacare wasn't so much a repeal and replace. It was just sort of making Obamacare worse. So long term, I think it was a good thing that that did not pass. And hopefully now they can concentrate on some other things that I think are going to be better for the economy than just messing around with the Affordable Care Act.
Well, that's a good point. So that deal fell apart on Friday, so they would have traded on it yesterday. Yesterday was a down day, but not that big of a deal. So it looks as if maybe Wall Street's okay with that particular move going away for a while?
Yes. In fact, yesterday the market was down, I think, 140 points in the Dow and 20 points in the S&P. Early on, as you say, in response to that no confidence non-vote. And instead, we reversed and got positive for the NASDAQ and S&P. And today, obviously, it's almost just off to the races. Dow's up over 100. S&P is up over, I think, 12 or 13 points. And it's like yesterday or the beginning of yesterday never happened.
Well, and so, you know, we've talked so much about this Trump rally and how much of it is based on expectation and things are going to do well. It seems as if the president himself needs a win. Does Wall Street need for him to get a win under his belt? We might have lost. Did we lose John? He just went for the coconuts. Maybe a banana drink. I don't know.
No.
Oh, there you are. John, we're going to try to reconnect with you. Are you there? All right, we're going to try to touch base and reconnect with John. But the idea is, you know, and so much of this rally, which it's been great, but it hasn't been based on a lot of concrete measures or accomplishments just yet. Just sort of, I don't want to use the word promises, maybe plans. Plans is a better word. Plans for tax reform, plans for infrastructure. That's the sort of stuff that looks good on Wall Street. And Wall Street has responded, but there haven't been successes just yet. There have been some with executive orders when it comes to the pipelines and things such as that. I'm curious as to whether Wall Street needs to see success, a concrete success from the president in order to keep this, or if perhaps not, if the plans and the proposals and the promises and all of that are enough to keep things going. We're trying to reconnect with John, but, well, I don't know. Maybe it's happy hour there. I don't know. 12:16 in the afternoon there in the same time zone. Do we have him here? All right, John's back on a phone line. John, I appreciate your patience with me. I know it's on your vacation, but I was just asking, you know, does Wall Street, are they going to need to see a success from the president to keep this going, or are they okay with the plans?
Well, the success, hopefully, in the next, so it won't be an overnight that they'll just pass tax reform, but that's the big one, Steve, is the fiscal spending and the tax reform. Those are the two really big drivers, because that frees up almost $3 trillion overseas if they can get the tax plan passed. I think that is going to be much easier than fighting against the Health Care Act, but I think it'll take even more time. I think it'll take into the second half of 2017.
All right. Do you have a stock that you're watching today?
Yeah. We've continued to see stocks in the oil patch do well. So Weatherford WFT is one of those stocks. We've been buying it since the $4 range, and that was right after the election. Now it's about $6.60. And we're targeting, you know, to move up to about $8 over the next month and a half. So we're in that one pretty heavy right now.
John Najarian, thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your vacation. We'll talk again next week. It's 12:22. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is in the studio. Andrew, senior editor at DNA Info. And if he hangs out long enough today, he can stick around to talk a little barbecue. We're going to be talking to the people behind Southern Cut Barbecue coming in. They opened not too long ago, up a little bit up Michigan Avenue.
Will there be samples involved?
I really don't know. That's up to, I really have no idea, but maybe. Maybe you should go. I don't know how much they're bringing.
You could just feed me what you usually feed me for the business lunch, which is zero.
Sometimes a hearty hi-ho and a pat on the back. All right, so I'm old enough to remember my formative days at the stadium, having a couple of beers after a bad Bulls game,
uh-huh,
and then buying a six-pack through plexiglass on a convenience store near the parking lot on the way home.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me the transformation of Madison Street,
yeah,
and in Chicago and in that area in general. There's a lengthy article on it now on dnainfo.com.
Right, right. So this is Madison Street, basically from the Loop to the stadium, and the local business people want to create an entertainment district along that stretch.
Right, and they kind of have an entertainment district.
Yeah, it's kind of popping up here and there, and they can see that it's sort of naturally growing,
right,
but they want to have a plan and an idea and some sort of organization behind it. So they've gotten together, and they've first you got to come up with a name, right? And they've come up with a name, and it's called Madison Row.
Which I love, because they're not pretending that there wasn't a Skid Row there.
Yeah.
In a way, they're kind of embracing it.
I was surprised. You know, I knew it was kind of a dicey area, like you say, when we were kids,
yeah,
but the whole history of how it was a Skid Row there.
I was going to say, it's Armando Chacon, right, wrote the story. Is that the...
The history that I've heard about it was, so at the turn of the last century, there were a lot of single men who worked for the railroad, and they lived around there, right? So there were a lot of like single residency occupancy.
Back when that was a little more upstanding.
Yeah. And then the Depression hit, and all these guys lost their jobs, but they didn't move. And it became, that became Chicago's Skid Row. And there was a Time magazine piece in 1949 that did a big expose and looked at the area, and they called it the Land of the Living Dead.
Wow.
And it described how the area was nothing but alcoholics, criminals, and prostitutes. And that was for a long time Chicago's, Skid Row. And then around 1996, when the Democratic National Convention came, remember, Daley went through there and kind of had it cleared out.
It's another reason why I really like this story, because, you know, we often read about, well, if this comes to town, this will have an impact on the neighborhood. If this comes, you know, and
yeah,
a lot of times it's politicians trying to push something they want.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a case where the Democratic Convention came to town in 96. It spurred government spending there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it looks as if maybe started the reversal of this whole area.
Right. I mean, they did knock down a lot of dilapidated buildings.
Put up a lot of wrought iron fences.
That's right. And pretty soon, you can't underestimate Oprah's impact on the area too, so that brought people into that near west side, and now we have the restaurants on at Fulton Market and Randolph, and this is just sort of an extension of that. So it's still at its very start, but at least it's a coordinated effort, and it could be pretty cool someday.
And so the idea now is that they're trying to provide a little cohesion to it, right? I mean, it's
right,
been growing, but now they want to give it some form.
What they've seen a lot of is apartment buildings going up and restaurants here and there, but what they really want is some retail
to sustain the people who live there.
Yes, so that the people who live there have somewhere to shop. So.
And those people who live there, I would imagine, are young families and all of that, right?
That would be my guess as well, yeah.
Young families who want to bring a pet into the family, which brings us up a little further to the north side. What's this company called?
Well, this is Pitter Patter Parenting.
Say it again for me, will you?
Pitter Patter Parenting.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so, you know, we often talk about how businesses launch and it's somebody who has some expertise at something and an interest in something, and they kind of combine them. And that's kind of what happened here. This is a woman named Alicia Obando, and she is a licensed family and child therapist, but she was also working at the Anti-Cruelty Society. And one thing that she saw was that people would adopt dogs for their families, and then a couple weeks later, they would bring them back and say, this dog right. isn't working out.
Right.
And so she figured out, well, maybe there's a business there in basically consulting families about pets before they actually have pets.
And so she's created a business in sort of being the marrying particular dogs to
well,
families?
Well, she'll help you a family pick a new pet. She gives safety classes for kids. There's grief counseling, but basically it's the person who says, oh, you want a dog? Let me tell you how what a dog is really right. all about, or
right.
a cat. And she held a kind of a event last weekend. It was $30, and it was for a weekend workshop for parents who are expecting a new baby and already have a pet. So this was sort of like integrating the baby into the house, because you know you can't take the babies back
right.
if
no.
they don't work out.
No,
but at first it seems kind of ridiculous. But as now a person who owns a dog, I completely understand this whole thing.
I wonder if there's ever been a time when Americans spent less money on pets. You know, what I mean by that is, I know we spend a lot now,
yeah.
but I mean, I think it's probably always gone up. I wonder if there's ever been a time where we dropped the spending, because it seems like it's an automatic when it comes to a
business.
Well,
we did see it stagnate during the recession.
Did we?
Yeah. I remember data coming out showing that the first one to go was Fido.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's right. People were getting rid of their dogs because that was,
that's sad.
You know, that was something that they could save money on, just not having to buy that food.
You can't return the baby.
Exactly.
All right, check out more of this, dnainfo.com/Chicago. Andrew Herman, thanks for coming by.
All right.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Tuesday afternoon. And, I always remember the first week in April as the weekend that the World Champion Women's Hockey Championships get underway. And that's certainly no different this week. To talk about all of that and to break it down is our female World Champion Hockey expert. Suzanne Yushin.
That was good.
Who
that
also
was good, Steve.
The co-host of The Big Payoff on WGNRadio.com. Suzanne, how are you? Happy birthday.
I'm okay. Thank you so much. I think we both dragged ourselves into the studio today.
It's the weirdest thing. Everybody I know has had some sort of cold or is dealing with it, and two of us are no exception. And you had it on your birthday, which is too bad. Yesterday was my daughter's 21st birthday. How about that?
I forgot why that we have that. We share that. About that.
All right, let's play hockey. Women's World Hockey Championship team says they're not going to participate coming up this weekend because, tell me why, because they're not paid as much as the men, or because
right.
they think they should be paid more than they are?
No, because they feel they should be paid more than they are. And in fact, there's an update since even this morning that there may, in fact, be a deal in place.
Oh, good.
But let's just back up and say, you know, we've talked about this issue in soccer and in other sports where, you know, the discrepancy between women and men, on the one hand, with soccer being the exception, you can say is generally because they don't have as big of a viewership, and this is a business, and it is based on sponsorship, but still, there should be some amount of equity, and it's just not there. Soccer is a different story because the women actually really do get the viewership and, in fact, win more tournaments than the men.
We're talking about Olympic soccer, right? Yeah.
Well, the women's national team.
Okay.
I mean, though they do far better than the men. But in this case, what I love about this is that the women, I love two things. First of all, that the women really were standing up for themselves to the point where they were willing to boycott the USA championships, and also that the men were willing to stand with them, which I think made a difference. And as you're seeing this morning, they said they think that a deal has been put in place.
So that's good.
They're going to vote within the hour.
It starts this weekend, right?
Starts on Friday in Plymouth, Michigan.
I was reading your name in the Tribune this week in a Rex Hupke column about Ivanka Trump. And we've talked about this from time to time, Ivanka Trump moving in to sort of maybe coordinate women's issues at the White House, or she's got an office in the West Wing. She's apparently got some security clearance, which bothers a lot of people. So Rex wrote a piece on that and talked to you. I want to touch on that in a second. But first, I think it was just yesterday, President Trump had a women's conference at the White House and opened things up this way.
Today, women are the primary source of income in 40% of American households with children under the age of 15. We also know that companies that promote women to senior leadership roles realize significantly better profits, according to statistics, than their competitors. I wouldn't have known that. Dina, how does that work?
I thought you'd appreciate his little surprise at that.
That's why I wanted you to play the whole quote, because come on. That data point has been out there forever. It's sort of like him saying, you know, who knew healthcare was so complicated?
Who knew Lincoln was a Republican?
Who knew? Steve, who knew? Who among us knew?
Okay, but so if, you know, you criticize him for a lot of what he's done or hasn't done, this seems to be an area where those who would be his natural skeptics or maybe even opponents might jump on board, right? I mean, are you seeing positive things here?
I do. I mean, look, we can separate how he's handling it, his tone, even his little sort of patronizing moments. The fact is, he is convening the meetings. He is making this, interestingly, on the Monday back from his disaster, you know, put this meeting in place, which obviously means it's something he thinks he can win on. And I think that's great. And I'm not being sarcastic. I think it's great. It's interesting, if you look at the table, the picture of who's at the table, Ivanka is two down from him, right? And she's also appears to be almost in like working gear, like sleeves rolled up, let's get to work. So who knows? Maybe they're thinking a little bit more critically about this issue.
Well, what about the whole Ivanka thing? I mean, I'm a little troubled when you've got family members becoming sort of the inner cadre of an administration, whether it's her husband or her or whatever. That's a concern for me. But I think, I think if it comes to women in the workplace and all of that, I mean, that's certainly somewhere where she might have a great impact. But she keeps getting grief over it.
She might.
Why does she get the grief?
It's not so much grief over the fact that she has this role. And again, as I said in the article, nepotism, it has existed since the beginning of time. I don't think we can blame the issue or people's upset specifically on that. What I think people want to see more of is, if she's going to have this role, which clearly was through nepotism, then let's take some actions, Ivanka, that show that you're taking it seriously. Why isn't she on a listening tour? Why aren't you hitting the streets, talking to women's group, listening, trying to absorb the information and data points? I just think we haven't heard enough about what she knows, what she cares about, what her agenda is going to be. I think that's what's making people uncomfortable.
I think that the people who are coming down on her for getting this position because of her context, that's how people get positions. I mean, this one happens to be family, but right? What's LinkedIn about? LinkedIn's about making connections and being in a position to find someone you know, find you a job.
I actually couldn't agree more. And in fact, there were some exchanges on Facebook in which I said, look, it is actually impossible for any of us to thrive in a vacuum. It doesn't happen. So, you know, we can nitpick at the fact that, you know, any number of leaders got their roles through whatever you want to call it. Let's just put it this way. They didn't start in the mailroom and work their way up. I really, Steve, I'm not saying that's the issue here. I think that there's a particular kind of responsibility Ivanka now has to show everyone, not just women, what her agenda actually is and what it's based on. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, that would be great if she could really champion the issue, travel around and create some goodwill is for the administration as well. She swoops into Omaha, has a forum, things like that.
Yeah, we know she can't wear leggings when she travels, though.
I was going to say, I'm sorry you're under the weather because I'm wearing my new leggings today.
Are you?
I am.
Are you? I'm so bummed I missed that.
And they're kind of high-waisted. I don't know if that's the style or not, but I just pulled them all the way up.
Yeah, are you wearing a crop top with that? Because that's a good look for you.
I don't
you.
Really know what a crop top is.
Good.
What
I
is
think a crop that's
top?
A good thing.
Is that a midriff thing?
Yeah, you know, it kind of comes up a little bit above the belly button.
Okay,
well, let's just say it's not a good look for most people, and I wouldn't recommend it for you.
I am feeling a bit of a breeze. I will say that. so this all has to do with the United Airlines Twitter storm. I think this
Oh my gosh.
I love this because it just shows how people are so quick to react that more often or very often they're reacting incorrectly, right? So United bans these girls from getting on the plane because they've got leggings. The whole world is on fire. Well, come to find out, they were traveling for free or to greatly reduce pass on this friends and family thing. And if you are doing that, United says you've got to present the company in a way better than most passengers would. They weren't, so they weren't allowed to board the plane. Did I put that fairly?
Yeah, you did. I think there are two important points here. One is the woman who was observing this, unfortunately for United, was a woman named Shannon Watts, who's the founder of Moms Demand Action. So she's got this grassroots army. So if anyone had to be at the gate when this occurred, she would not have been a good choice for United. The second problem is that, to your point, United actually did have a rationale for this. The problem is they didn't say it. Their tweets literally just started saying, right, you know, this is our policy, and it didn't describe any of the rationale. And it also, as some of the articles then unfolded, said, it's not a policy that's been widely implemented. So it's not as if it's tip of tongue for people traveling. Oh, there's a dress code for people who are friends and family of people related to United. It was handled poorly.
Should the activist woman suffer anything for this or be held accountable at all?
I think she owes it to her following to come forward and actually explain some amount of the rationale from United's point of view, only because, again, in this world of, you know, quote, fake news and people spreading things that just simply aren't true, it isn't fair to say United had no reason for this, right?
Right.
What she could say is, I was troubled by the fact that they didn't explain that clearly, or that it seems to have been very bizarrely implemented in this setting with these young girls, which isn't consistent with how they typically implement it, something like that. But she hasn't said that yet.
It's another great example, too, of how everything we see with the brain we bring to the picture.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, she was looking to see young people being discriminated against, and that's exactly what she saw.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand why she saw that, but she started a storm without maybe the entire picture. All right. Well, listen.
Just look just for 1 second at United's response, where they missed two, where it says United Airlines shall have the right to refuse passengers if they are not properly clothed via our contract of carriage. I mean, come on. Who would know that contract of carriage, Steve?
Yeah, it's a good point.
That's the problem.
All right, Suzanne Muchin, you can listen to more of this at The Big Payoff on WGNplus.com and all sorts of different places. Put your feet up. Take the day off. Hope you feel better.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
Thank you very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. What the heck? Lunch is in the name of the show. So let's talk about that. Southern Cut is a restaurant that opened just a few weeks ago up a little bit north of here on Michigan Avenue, off Michigan Avenue. And the guys behind Chicago Cut are behind this one. One of those guys is David Flom, who's in the studio. David, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having us
today. And who is it you brought with us here?
This is Executive Chef Leanne Whippen, a.k.a. the Pitmaster.
The Pitmaster. Leanne,
good
welcome
morning.
As well. All right, so tell me about the idea of, well, you've opened several restaurants, but how does this one compare to other openings? What have you learned?
Oh, I mean, barbecue is a specialty in itself, you know, in that, you know, there's people who are just diehard barbecue fans. Two nights ago, there was a couple sitting at a table, and they said they drove up from Missouri. They had nothing to do and wanted to come try Leanne's food. Leanne's one of probably the 10 most recognized barbecue chefs in the country.
And so, Leanne, do you consider this sort of a mission to bring barbecue to Chicago, or how do you do that? How, not that you need to introduce barbecue here, but if you're doing a fine restaurant of barbecue, there must be some sort of responsibility of education as well.
Absolutely, and that's why I'm there all the time. I love talking barbecue to all of my customers, and I'm hands-on. We have our Southern Pride smoker in the middle of the restaurant. So
that's
they can
unusual,
act,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually in the back, so you really actually see me hands-on preparing the meat for you, and that's what I've been doing for over 21 years in competitive barbecue and also former, you know, barbecue restaurants.
TLC, right? We see you on TV.
Yes, the Pitmasters.
How does this opening of a restaurant, how does this one differ from past experience with you in business?
This one's different because it's a little bit more elevated, I would say, country elegance.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, the location is premier, of course, being, you know, a block off of the Magnificent Mile. So a lot of tourists that come in, you know, will be able to get very good barbecue.
Okay, so when I think barbecue, that's a good point, because I think of, you know, just sloppy walking out with stains on your belly and all of that stuff. But David, this is is this a high-end restaurant? It's a higher-end restaurant? How do you marry those two?
Well, I mean, besides Tide Sticks on every table. You know what? I don't think there's a person in the world that at some point in their life likes to check out and go to a place that's not as busy as an urban area as Chicago. And so if this is a two-hour escape for you in the middle of the day to go do that, or, you know, listen to some country music, or think about going up to Wisconsin or Michigan like a lot of people in Chicago do at some point in the summer, this is a nice escape for you. If most barbecue places are sitting on Highway 29 in the middle of nowhere, you know, you think about Chicago in the winter, it's nice to escape from those thoughts.
But it's one thing to get someone to come in for a fine steak, right? And it's a different journey that a lot of people maybe haven't taken. So you've got to inaugurate that in a way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so it's a whole new breed of customers that we're bringing in, and we're seeing people come to the city. You know, we see people who are coming out from the country who come into the city because they love going down Michigan Avenue and all that, but yet they say, oh, my God, there's a barbecue place. That's what my favorite kind of food is.
All right, so the thing's rolled out February 3rd, right?
Right.
And what have you learned since February 3rd? Anything, Leanne?
We tried to make it quiet, but word travels fast.
Oh, good. So things are going well.
Very well. Thank you.
And expanding already?
Yeah, we're going to add a second location over at 20 West Kinsey, right next to our other restaurant called Ocean Cut. But it'll be open in a couple weeks here at Southern Cut Barbecue as well.
All right, so would you tell me the biggest mistake you've made so far?
We need more smokers.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. I will agree with that.
That's a happy mistake. That sounds like the chef telling the owner you need to get on that. I don't know.
Yeah, no, we're on it, and we're expanding, and it's been great. We've had multiple nights where we've had a line out the door and people waiting for a table. We've had about five nights where we ran out of meat, which obviously we're trying not to do.
Wow, no kidding.
So these are all good problems they have, but we obviously want to keep growing and do it the right way.
All right, what's this thing about pig powder?
Pig powder has been my dad's signature dry rub growing up. He would do ribs in the backyard, and it's such an incredible, it's got 13 different ingredients. We use it on all the pork and chicken. It's one best rub on the planet. It's my secret recipe now. He's handed it down to me and my sister, and that's what we use in the restaurant.
Leanne Whip, and stop by Southern Cut, ask nicely, and she'll tell you everything that's in it.
No.
David Flom as well. Thanks for coming by, you guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.